Hello, this is Anil Kumar from Back to the Bible radio broadcast. As we continue our current series called Life Lessons from David, the man who would be the king, Dr. Neufeld speaks about a critical episode in the battle between David and Goliath. So let's now turn to 1 Samuel chapter 17 verses 31 to 54 for today's message on learning to fight in your own armor.
It's easy to view the account of David defeating Goliath as a picture or a metaphor encouraging us that we can slay the giants in our lives. Now, unfortunately, that has become one of the primary ways the story is applied. But when we do that, we miss the real drama of the story, and more so, we also miss the real point of application. Let's back up. The story of David, even though it contains so many life lessons for us, is in one way so different from what any one of us will ever experience. David is the anointed king of Israel and the forerunner and representative of the Messiah, Jesus. He is the one appointed by God to bring salvation to Israel and the one whose victories prefigure the ultimate triumph of his greater son. And so this is not a story of how to conquer the giants in your life. This is a story of how God's anointed has conquered the giants in your life on your behalf. Only once that is understood are we in a place to apply our own warfare to the giants we face. For we have a strong champion whose name is Jesus, who has overcome the enemy of our souls on our behalf. And because of his great victory, we too, in his wake, are victorious. If you want a point of identification, identify with Israel, who after David overthrows Goliath, surge forward and send the Philistines to flight. But let's not get ahead of ourselves. Let's tell the story the way it's written. I want to tell this story in five movements or five great sweeping events. Here's the first. David is portrayed as the shepherd of God's people. That's part of the story found in 1 Samuel 17, 31 to 37. You remember that Eliab, David's older brother, is upset with what he sees as his younger brother's arrogance. David has been repeating words all around the camp of Israel. Who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God? And finally, as David will not stop repeating this phrase, his words are repeated to King Saul. As we noticed last time, David is young. We placed his age around 15, maybe 16, but as young as he is brought before the king. Now I'm reading verses 32 to 33. And David said to Saul, "Let no man's heart fail because of him. Your servant will go and fight with this Philistine." And Saul said to David, "You're not able to go against this Philistine to fight with him, for you are but a youth, and he has been a man of war from his youth." And so Saul, who might have appreciated the courage and zeal of this young man, would not send him. He's most likely less concerned with David's death, but rather what David's death would mean for Israel, it would mean defeat. I find it hard to place blame on Saul at this point in the narrative. David is too young for the army. He has no military experience, and this would be disaster. In response, David lays out his credentials. He may be young, but he has been protecting sheep. And while he was doing that, on one occasion, he killed a lion and another occasion a bear. He describes taking the lion by the beard and striking him. And Psalm doesn't know this, but David is describing his calling. In Psalm 78, verses 70 to 71, Asaph writes, "He chose David his servant and took him from the sheepfolds. From following the nursing ewes, he brought him to shepherd Jacob his people, Israel his inheritance." See, Asaph knew that which all Israel would come to know, watching over sheep, which seems to have been despised by Eliab and David's older brothers, was the ideal training ground for David's life mission. See, God never wastes our experiences. Goliath was not unlike the bear who came to maul God's sheep, and David, God's chosen shepherd, would protect the sheep God had entrusted to him. And before we move on, we do well to remember Jesus' words in John 10, as he describes himself as the good shepherd who lays down his life for the sheep. It is this role that David is fulfilling. And Saul doesn't realize that David is conveying something to him. But he knows enough to let him into the battle. All he says is, "Go, and the Lord be with you." All right, David is determined to be the shepherd of God's people, and we know this is because God has chosen him for the task. Let's move to the second movement in the story. David selects the tools of his warfare. Verse 38 says, "Then Saul clothed David in his armor." The passage describes a helmet of bronze, a coat of mail, and a sword. David tries to walk and finds himself unable to use them. Verses 39 to 40 say, "Then David said to Saul, 'I cannot go with these, for I have not tested them.' So David took them off. Then he took a staff in his hand and chose 5 smooth stones from the brook and put them in his shepherd's pouch. His sling was in his hand, and he approached the Philistine." I find it fascinating to read this account against the background of Samuel having anointed both of these men to be king. Saul, the first king, and the rejected king. David, the man who would follow him. Both have the same task from the Lord. Finish the job Moses gave you. Secure the promised land for the people of God and protect them from their enemies. And as these two men meet for the first time, the issues they discuss are the weapons of their warfare. Saul with his armor, and David with the weapons of a shepherd. The first man comes having deeply bought into the idea of the traditional role of the king, authority, traditional weapons. The second finds himself unable to function within that kind of a system. You remember in Matthew 20, verse 25, Jesus spoke of the kings of the earth who lorded over their followers, but he had come differently, meekly, as a servant. You know, I entitled this message, "Learning to Fight in Our Own Armor." I'm reminded of 2 Corinthians 10, verses 3 and 4. There Paul writes, "For though we walk in the flesh, we are not waging war according to the flesh. For the weapons of our warfare are not of the flesh, but have divine power to destroy strongholds." See, in that passage, Paul speaks of destroying all arguments raised against God. Furthermore, Paul will acknowledge how often people will view him as weak and then argue that his only reason to boast is in the Lord. I hope you won't find me taking too many liberties with this account of David, as I find the story of David and Saul's armor to be significant. David will not be a king like Saul. Neither will he wage war as Saul did. He will use the weapons that God has supplied him with. His training was in the fields as a shepherd, not in the halls of the power of the world's kings. And I think there's a lesson here for us. If we are to live lives of significance, we will have to learn to fight the Lord's battles according to the training that He supplies. Have a look at the gifts that God has given you. Become familiar with the strengths that He has supplied. Know the Scriptures well and rely on what God has promised. And so David is a shepherd, and no one has heard of a shepherd king before. But because he knows God's preparation for his life, he chooses the tools for his battle, a sling, a shepherd's pouch, a staff, and 5 smooth stones. Most Bible teachers will argue that the typical stones would have been about the size of a tennis ball. This he takes into battle. Now comes the third movement in the story. David's confidence is not in his weapons, but in his God. David now, dressed in the attire of a shepherd boy, steps out onto the dry riverbed and faces off against Goliath, the man of war. Verse 42 reads, "And when the Philistine looked and saw David, he disdained him, for he was but a youth, ruddy and handsome in appearance." See, David's physical appearance is mentioned, but it is not that which impresses Goliath. You might have expected Goliath to be relieved. This would be a short fight. But here we must remember that he is a champion, and every time he strikes down a great and mighty man, his reputation and standing in Philistia is greatly enhanced. This will do nothing for him. It is merely the slaughter of a teenaged Jewish shepherd boy. He feels insulted. Verse 43, "And the Philistine said to David, 'Am I a dog that you come to me with sticks?' And the Philistine cursed David by his gods." Now listen to David's response. I'm reading verse 45. "Then David said to the Philistine, 'You come to me with a sword and with a spear and with a javelin, but I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied.'" Please don't misunderstand this interaction. Yes, Goliath is engaging in the kind of trash talk that happens between people before they go to war to slaughter each other. It's an attempt to intimidate people before the battle. But that's not what David is up to. Richard Phillips says that David is pronouncing sentence on Goliath for the capital crime of blasphemy. In Leviticus 24, verse 16, we read, "Whoever blasphemes the name of the Lord shall surely be put to death. All the congregation shall stone him. The sojourner as well as the native, when he blasphemes the name, shall be put to death." David, argues Phillips, is acting as God's representative, delivering a just sentence on the man who sojourned in Israel. For David, this is not simple warfare. This is about God's holiness, his glory, his great name, which is to be spread throughout the earth. This is what Moses envisioned when he said in Numbers 14:21 that the whole earth will be filled with the glory of the Lord. And so to come to Goliath in the name of the Lord is to come as God's emissary, pronouncing on him the judgment God has declared. And there is here a clear parallel between this account and the account of Moses standing before Pharaoh and demanding that he release Israel. Who was Moses against the power of Egypt? But Moses had come in the name of the living God. In Exodus 9:16, Moses tells Pharaoh what God is saying. I have raised you up to show my power in you, so that my name might be declared in all the earth. And David, like Moses, is saying the same thing. And when we come back, I will show you why David and Goliath tells us about Jesus and his salvation.
As we are discovering the real issues behind the story of David defeating Goliath, we begin to see an important theme. In a sense, this is about how God's chosen servant has conquered the battle for us. In the end, we see that this story is pointing to what Christ did on our behalf. There is much yet to be learned, so join us again as Dr. Neufeld shows us how we can rightfully apply these lessons from the battlefield in our own lives. Back to the Bible, leading people into a dynamic relationship with God. The Bible contains many passages about the topic of wisdom. Here are a few examples. James chapter 1 verse 5 says, "If any of you lacks wisdom, let him ask God, who gives generously to all without reproach, and it will be given him." Or how about Ecclesiastes chapter 7 verse 12 says, "For the protection of wisdom is like the protection of money. And the advantage of knowledge is that wisdom preserves the life of him who has it." Wisdom is a critically important issue for all believers to understand and apply it. Hopefully, you have had a chance to listen to Dr. Neufeld's recent series on the subject called Skillful Living, focusing on Proverbs, known as wisdom literature. We learned all about what it means to live a wise and godly life. This great series is available on CD for our valuable listeners. To receive it, call us at 9492440070 or email at info@backtothebible.in.